Here we are again for another week with Living Free from the Pain of Divorce speaker series. I'm floating with excitement for creating a space that allows people to literally live free from the pain of divorce. Our first week was designed to heal the pain and emerge stronger. Our speaker shared with us some unconscious ways that you keep stuck in the pain that increases conflict. 7 questions to help you move through the fears caused by divorce. What's self-talk? Can you list the 100 ways that you are good enough? We gave tips on how to create emotional freedom. A 4-step process to love and accept all the qualities of who you are, the ones you consider bad or good. You were given 6 key essential messages kids need to hear when you're telling them about divorce. You also were given a couple of serious mistakes parents make after divorce when they're fighting in front of the children or they're having kids choose sides. We learned about the importance about becoming conscious of our approximately 70,000 thoughts each day. Then Marcy shared with us that 80% of them are negative, and so we really need to become conscious of what we are thinking. And that we're in charge of our happiness, that we can change it, and that there's 21 happiness habits to reset our happiness set point. So you can have all these recordings plus lots of MP3s, workbooks, coaching by going to bonuslivingfreefromdivorce.com so you can go back and capture all the messages speaking to you. You can also earmark some of the speaker's comments to go back to when you know you're ready to go to the next step. This second week is focused on finding your way, reclaiming your life. As Joel Osteen says, are you ready for a new chapter in your life? Sometimes in order to move forward into the blessing God has for you, you have to be willing to let go of the old. The things that are behind you are not nearly as important as what is out in front of you. It's time to get ready for the new. You may have had some unfair things happen, things that you don't understand. But let me tell you, you've come too far to stop now. Instead of allowing those things to hold you back, why don't you let go and take a step of faith into the new? It's time to get a new, bigger vision. It's time to get a new, fresher outlook. It's time to rise up with a new attitude. Instead of settling where you are, pick up and move forward. Have the attitude that says, I may not understand it, it may have been unfair, but I'm not getting stuck on this page. I know God has a new chapter for me, a chapter filled with blessings, favor, and victory. So let's take a moment and connect with that with our centering exercise. Close your eyes and take a deep breath. Just notice any feelings that might have been triggered from thinking about being ready for the next chapter of your life. Take a few deep breaths into that. Just notice, are you breathing deeply? Are you breathing shallowly? Try another breath and see if you can go a little deeper. Give yourself permission to relax. Is there tightness in your body? Does it feel possible or not quite possible to start the next chapter of your life? Is there resistance? Are you able to allow that bigger vision for your life? Take a moment to see one thing that you want new of more of in your life. Notice what your life would feel like if you had that. Just breathe into that. Feel it. And take another breath and come back to the call. Well, today we have a special guest speaking, Tom Massey is a dear friend to me. Tom and I have been on this spiritual journey together over 15, 20 years. Whenever we have the opportunity to share, we love the chance to open up to each other because we know you'll be accepted and ignited from the time that we spend together. But add to that, I owe Tom a lot because Tom introduced me to my husband. They've been buddies since the first grade. It's pretty marvelous. So let me introduce you, the professional side of my friend, to you. Tom is going to speak to us today about how bad do you really want it. He's a performance coach and a corporate trainer who assists people in overcoming life's challenges and optimizing personal success. He's the author of 7 books, including How Bad Do You Really Want It?, Getting From Where You Are to Where You Want to Go, and The Shovel, When Tragedy Meets Transformation. Tom will be sharing strategies for reclaiming your life after divorce by shifting your mental focus, creating new rituals, and becoming aware of the power of your self-talk. Well, welcome, Tom. Thanks for being willing to be part of our speaker series. Why don't you share with the listeners about your journey and how you've gotten to where you are today?
Okay, Dottie, thanks. It's good to be here with you. And I am excited about what you're doing and all the help that you're bringing people and the inspiration that you're bringing to folks through this series. As you said, academically and professionally both, I've spent more than 30 years studying human behavior and specifically what drives people to initiate and also to sustain positive change in their lives. And helping people to move from where they are to where they want to be in the future, which may include the accomplishment of dreams and goals and the situation. The topic today would be to build successfully fulfilling relationships and to deal with the adversity and all the struggles that go along with that. Personally, I've experienced the gut-wrenching pain of divorce, as many of the listeners have today, and the full gamut of emotions that are associated with the ending of a relationship. And, you know, it can be every bit as devastating as death. Sometimes I've heard people say that a divorce was actually more devastating to them in a lot of ways emotionally than the death of a loved one, because it leaves people often, and I know from firsthand experience, I felt a sense of failure, I felt the full gamut, the sense of betrayal, a sense of anger, humiliation, regret, remorse, guilt, sadness, despair, hopelessness, all of those emotions that go along with that. But, you know, in looking back in every one of those situations, they were gifts to me. Unfortunately, we can only connect the dots looking backwards. That every one of those were gifts, because how much better can I fulfill my soul contract of being an encourager to people who are going through tough times than having known their struggles? Someone once said the greatest source of power that we have as healers comes from our own point of woundedness. And so that has been my personal path as well. So I understand the feelings of divorce, and I also have undertaken the study of behavior many years to develop some strategies to help people with that, and that's what we'll focus on today. There are 3 different areas that I'd like to focus on today, as you mentioned in the introduction. First of all, shifting our focus. And you mentioned Joel Osteen, and I love his work as well. He talks a lot about thinking and what we're focusing on. And if you've studied the law of attraction, which probably many of your audience members have today, you know that what we think about, we bring about. Also, Einstein said that we can't solve our current problems at the level of thinking that got us here. And so if we want to change what we're doing, if we want to change our situation in life, we have to raise our level of thinking up to a higher level. Now, it's perfectly normal, and I think it's healthy, to allow yourself some time to grieve when you go through loss. And I think it's perfectly normal to experience. And in fact, I think we should. If we go through denial, if we repress those, then they come back at some other point in our lives. So it's good to allow that work to take its course in our own lives emotionally. And through that, there's an experiencing of a wide range of emotions and what I call going through the thousand questions, you know, where you ask about all the things that you could have and that you should have done, that you would have done, the if only types of questions and responses that we go through. You know, there's a difference. I believe there's a difference between regret and remorse. If we spend time a prolonged period in regret of what we should have done in a relationship, then regret comes from the same term as regression. It keeps causing us to look backwards, and so there's a continual regression in our lives. So regret is not a productive emotion. I think that we can use emotions as levers to help us and to strengthen us as a lever does. It helps us to lift more weight than we normally could. Where remorse is a whole different emotion. It comes from the word morsel, which means a bite, you know, like a bite of food. And remorse actually causes pain. It actually takes a bite out of us. And so when we're in a state of remorse, we don't want to go back there. We turn around and we start to move forward. We don't want to repeat the process. So in that sense, regression or regret is a much more unproductive emotion than the sense of remorse over a sense of a failed relationship. And so we go through those thousand questions, and we should. We should allow ourselves some time to go through the grieving process. And then sometimes it helps in our focus to read about others, to read about how others have overcome tragedy and adversity in their lives. And, you know, sometimes some of the most inspiring stories that I've read were people who overcame tremendous loss and tragedy in their lives. At the same time, I was going through loss and tragedy, so there was a sense of not feeling alone as well. And often what that does, too, it helps us to gain some perspective. You know, sometimes we think what we're going through is a bad situation, then we look at somebody else and we think, oh my goodness, if they could go through that with a sense of joy and a sense of peace and a sense of calm, then maybe I can too. So it inspires us as well to do that. So take that time that you're grieving to begin to fill your mind with things like in inspirational stories and inspirational accounts. And you have to shift your attention to the more positive matters in life. You know, your brain is hardwired in that it will help you to be sensitive to the things that you give attention to. The brain actually invokes the reticular activation system, which is the part of your brain that causes you to be sensitive. It's like when you go buy a new car, you drive that thing off the lot and you see it everywhere. You see models of that car. You see billboards with that car on it. You see magazine articles and ads with the car. And this, are there any more of those cars out there now than there were before? Well, no, but you become more sensitive to that because your brain is hardwired to help point out things in your environment, things in your life that you give attention to. So when you start to shift your attention and your focus and your thinking to more positive things in your life, and you start to move away from maybe the feeling of being a victim in a relationship, then your brain helps you to create situations that will reinforce that thinking. Because eventually, regardless of what we've all gone through, we have to choose to be healed. you know, Jesus said to a man that had been carried around on a pallet, basically, for 30 years. And when they set him down in front of Jesus, he said, "Do you want to be healed?" And I think the question for us, for all of us, is, do we want to be healed? And the response was, then get up and walk. When he did, Jesus said, "Your faith has made you well." And so there's an action that we have to take on our part. We have to come to grips that we're the ones that are going to have to take the walk. We're going to be the ones that have to take the step. I think we all have to come to grips with this notion that the cavalry's not coming. There are times where we're going to have to move forward. Happiness isn't going to back up and get us. We've got to move where happiness is. And so we have to take some steps to do that. And that brings up the next point here, is to change your physiology. And some of that is we create new rituals in our lives as well. You know, physiology can trump psychology in a lot of ways. You may not be able to change your emotions immediately, but you can change your physiology immediately. You can get up and move and change where you are. There, it's a lot easier to act your way into feeling than it is to feel your way into action. I was talking to a young man on the phone one day. He had called me for some coaching and counseling, and he was distraught. I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm sitting here on my bed in my underwear crying." And I said, "Okay, the first thing you need to do is go take a shower, put on some nice clothes, and go out, go to the mall and walk around and call me from there." Well, he did, and later on he called. I said, "How do you feel?" He said, "I feel much better. I feel much better now." And so there are times that we need to take action, whether we feel like it or not. Go somewhere. Be with people. Don't isolate yourself. Act as if. And also create some new rituals in your life. You know, rituals give us defining moments in our lives. They're what distinguish every day from being another Wednesday. And so when we create rituals, then we start to have physiology that creates some sort of neural pathway or neural anchoring for us. And, you know, one of the biggest senses of losses that people have, I think, in relationships are the losses of rituals that we no longer share with our partners. You think about it. You know, all the things you used to do, all the places you used to go, there's a great sense of loss with the rituals that you shared together. So you have to create new rituals, and you have to do that based on a choice of will rather than a choice of feeling. And some of the examples of rituals are, one great ritual that I've used in my life and I've seen work with other people is the ritual of journaling. And so you start to journal, you start to write what you're thinking about. Down studies have shown over and over and over again that journaling is a great way to move through emotional distress. And so begin a ritual of journaling. And for you, it may look different than other people. You know, you may get up and you may write two or three lines, or you may fill a page, but get into the habit. And that's what rituals are. They're just habits. You're going to create new habits in your life. So you create a ritual of journaling. Keep a gratitude list. One of the things that I found, and you may find this as well, that your 3 o'clock in the afternoon self may be completely different than your 3 o'clock in the morning self. Sometimes you'll be awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning in fear, in devastation again, and you're going along pretty good. But in those wee hours of the morning when you're alone, and you feel a sense of vulnerability, it can be emotionally devastating in certain ways. Get up at that point. Don't lay there in your bed and go over and over and over again these thoughts that produce fear. Get up and write a gratitude list. Write the things down that you are grateful for. I suggest too that you have a create a ritual at night before you go to bed, or a ritual in the morning, where you write five things that you're grateful for. You know, gratitude and fear can't resolve and can't stay in the same space. If you're staying, if your heart and mind is in gratitude, fear can't get in. And so start a gratitude list. Another ritual I think is real helpful for people who are going through tough times, especially divorce, is begin an exercise program. You know, physiologically, exercise helps in that it creates endorphins, which are nature's feel-good drugs, or it's actually our internal opiate that causes us to have a heightened sense of well-being. And so start to exercise, create new rituals for yourself. And through doing that, too, you'll feel good about yourself. You'll feel better about yourself, and maybe engage a friend to exercise with as well. And another thing that goes along with that, begin healthy eating habits. You know, be careful about comfort food. I have asked people all over the country, I've asked thousands of people what they eat for comfort food. I have yet to have anybody tell me they eat broccoli and carrots for comfort food. You know, people eat, what do they eat? Chocolate, they eat sweets, they eat fast foods. They eat a lot of things that aren't good for them, that's for sure. And then what happens often when people go through divorce and tough emotional situations, they gain weight, which is a vicious cycle because they feel worse about themselves. They look in the mirror and they don't like what they see, and so they eat more junk food, and then they look in the mirror again, so it's a vicious cycle. So two of the things that you can do for your health is start exercising and start eating better. And again, you probably have to develop some support system to do that. Actually begin a class too. You can go to a yoga class. You can go to some class. Look in the paper at groups of people that get together and do book studies or other activities that you have maybe an interest in or passion for, and start to become associated with a new group. You know, when you go through a divorce, sometimes your friends, and you may have noticed this, become a little bit standoffish, especially if you've been married a long time. Well, the reason why is there's a sense of loss for them, too. They start to look at your relationship almost as the two of you as one person, so it's like somebody died, and they don't know how to respond to that. So sometimes they don't come around, and so you may feel a sense of isolation sometimes from your friends. So you may have to start developing a new circle of friendship in a way. I'm not saying leave all your old friends behind, but you will have to begin to establish some new circles there as well. But as you start to create new behaviors, like I said, you'll create new neural associations around those, and your brain will begin to actually let go of the old ones that you no longer use. And then speaking of neural associations, that brings us to the next point I want to talk about, and that's, one, to be aware of what you say, and then also, especially, be sensitive to what your self-talk is and change your self-talk. You know, words are powerful. We've already talked about that. You talked about Joel Osteen and some of the things he said about it, and they are. The words that you use to describe your experience will eventually become your experience. And there's a proverb that says that as well, the words you speak fall down and wrap themselves around you like a cloak. And so people adorn themselves in negativity with their words. So be careful about that. Don't go around talking about your problems with people and playing the victim. I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk this over with someone, either a close friend or a counselor, but be careful about just making things worse and just perpetuating the same old story over and over again. Start professing something positive with your words. Is it acting? Well, absolutely it's acting. It's an act of faith. Remember, your faith will heal you. And so you start to act as if. You start to speak words that are much more positive. You know, we've seen all kinds of studies in that. Dr. Emoto, the Japanese researcher that did the studies on water and actually wrote the book about the messages from water, saw that as even water itself, when we speak positive words, has a different molecular structure than water that have had, that's had negative words spoken over it. And it's obvious once you blow that up under a microscope and look at water itself. And so he said, if we can do that to water, imagine what we do to the inside of our bodies, especially when you take into account that we're over 70% water internally. So be careful about the words that you speak, because that becomes the experience that you have. And then your self-talk especially. You don't fall back to default self-talk. You've got to get off automatic pilot with your self-talk, especially in times of a divorce and stress, because it's so negative. You know, behavior experts tell us that 80% of self-talk is negative. And one of the reasons for that is, think about all the times that we've been told no in our lives. By the time a child is 5 years old, they've been told no probably 100,000 times. Why? Because think of what we say to kids. No, get down from there. No, you can't do that. No, 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 no. Comparatively, we were told yes a much fewer times, much fewer times. And so there, it's no wonder that our default self-talk is negative. And so we have to take control. You have to take control of your self-talk. And how do you do that? Well, you have to remind yourself, for one. You cue yourself. You leave reminder notes around and affirming notes posted around your environment to remind you, remind you. There's a scripture that says, transform your lives through the renewing of your mind. And so you want to work on the renewal of your mind there through your self-talk. And so you want to cue yourself, because again, self-talk is a habit. It's something that you just do over and over and over again until you deliberately and with intention start to change that. And so,
you know,
be
Tom,
careful. Yes.
One of the things that I know that I've read over and over again is the saying is, if you want to know what your life's going to look like in 5 years, listen to what you're saying today. So
it just
goes to affirm that. And, you know, when you were talking earlier about how you really have to shift and start looking at what you want, you know, shifting your whole mental focus. So I think that those are really strong points. And like you mentioned, even just at a time when it's so easy to stay in the negative and the victim role, it's even, you know, a stronger commitment that you have to make to, you know, be making these shifts to much more positive, inspirational kinds of things to help you move forward.
Absolutely.
I have a question for you.
You had mentioned
how important it is to have support as you're going through this divorce. You know, men are often not willing to ask for counsel or help or support as they go through a divorce. I know you led a men's group for years and even wrote a book about it. What would you say to a man to help them, give them permission to feel the pain and emerge stronger so that they can reclaim the life and not repeat the patterns of doing the same thing? Because until we become conscious of what our patterns were, we will not make different choices in the future. So we share some of that, because I know you loved that opportunity.
Sure.
To work with all those men.
Sure, and I agree with you. Men, we don't even like to ask directions when we know we're lost. You know, we just, you know, we just keep going. And I think for some reason, I think that we believe that if we ask for directions or if we ask for help, that implies some sort of weakness or glitch in our own armor. And so there's a reluctancy to do that. But we're much stronger, and nobody succeeds in a vacuum. You know, we're much stronger together. and to really admit that. And when we do, and what I found from working with men, that once one of the men are willing to express their own vulnerability and their fears, it gives permission for others to do the same. And so somebody has to take the lead on that. Somebody has to be big enough and brave enough sometimes to do that and to drop past there or to move through that in some way. And I'm not saying we do that with everybody, but we find somebody that everybody needs an accountability partner of some sort that they can be real with, somebody that takes our part when the world takes us apart. And that's what an accountability partner does. That's what a friend does as well. And I think men need men in that regard, and women need women, because we relate to each other physiologically and emotionally probably in different ways as well. So with men, I often tell men that, you know, even the Lone Ranger needed Tonto. We all have blind spots. Every one of us have blind spots, and we need somebody to say, are you aware you're not seeing this? And so, and to give people full permission to tell us without worrying about our feelings as well. It's important for us to do that. But somebody has to be willing to take off the armor first there. But when we do, you know, what Nelson Mandela say? Actually, he was, I'm not sure when Mandela said it. I know Marianne Williamson said it. When we walk in the light of who we are, you know, basically we give other people permission to do the same thing. So I think it's important for men to let down that guard and to give one another permission to do that and let people know it's okay. It's okay to feel fear. It's okay to express hurt in situations.
So in your experience, you know, prior to me asking you the question, do you feel like it's harder for men, you know, when we're talking about, you know, our words are powerful, the words you speak, and, you know, looking for inspiration things, is it, or maybe not is, because that's a yes-no question, what's it like for a man, because sometimes that feels a little soft, and just like you said, sometimes a man doesn't want to let down his armor, but how does a man start looking at how to refocus his life or, you know, to be looking at greater possibilities for their life and, you know, those kinds of things if that feels too soft for them, I guess is the word. I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that some men do. I think that they are so, I think we're not real comfortable with getting in touch with anything that resembles a feminine side, although we all, I mean, you know, the great teachers of the world have told us, you know, that we all have that yin and yang type of thing going on within us, but we have that locker room mentality where we want to, you know, we want to show people that we're tougher. And I think that men need to understand you can be tough. You can be tough. That to acknowledge this and to acknowledge that we have fear and we have hurt doesn't mean that we're weak. And I think it takes somebody. It takes somebody that's strong enough to get past that and say, you know, here's what I experienced in that there, because there's a lot of peer pressure there. There's a lot of pressure for us to be strong and to be manly, and you know, the emotion of anger is much more acceptable to express than the emotion of fear or the emotion of hurt. But really, when you peel it back, what's beneath anger? fear and hurt and a sense of loss sometimes as well. And if we can't get down to the core feeling, the core emotion, how will we ever get in touch with what we truly need? And so that's why I think men tend to get into behaviors that aren't healthy and repeated patterns of behaviors to deal with emotions, surface emotions. And so anger especially is a surface emotion. So what do we end up, what's the manifestation of that? Heart disease and other illnesses, dis-ease in the body. If you have dis-ease long enough, you can take away the hyphen. it will manifest itself into disease. Because why? Because all of the issues of life are in the tissues. They get lodged into the tissues. So if we carry around anger long enough, then there's a price for that there. And so if we want to deal with it, we have to go down below. It's kind of like, if you go into the doctor and you have some sort of a systemic disease and they give you an ibuprofen to help the pain in your finger. How good is that going to be? They're treating symptoms. And so anger is a symptom. And a lot of the emotions we feel as men are symptoms of something that's deeper. So we must be willing to go beyond that. But sometimes that takes, you said that you talked about me starting a men's group. It took months before we got to a point where we could be real with one another. And that's what we called our men's group, Real Men. And of course, there was an acronym for that. I won't go into that right now, but I will. Responsive, empathetic, affirming listeners is what I called Real Men. When I first made that up, I think they thought it was a little bit touchy-feely. But that's what it took. And it took months. And we had, even in that, we had a couple of guys that never did get real with us. Everything was always perfect for them. And we knew it wasn't. But they weren't willing to divulge that. And sometimes, there were points in their lives where they hit bottom where they did admit that. If they would have talked about it beforehand when they were in a downward spiral, it may have changed. And I think that if we're in a downward spiral, I think this is true for relationships as well, or any kind of spiral we're in. We have a choice whether or not to raise the bottom. We have a choice whether or not to face where we are and to start moving to something differently and get out of that downward spiral. Some people don't do it. They do that in addiction. They have to go ahead and go all the way down to where there's no place to go but up at that point. But we always have a choice. We can raise the bottom.
One of the things, Tom, that always, in the back of my mind is, how do we really, move to this place of finding our way and reclaiming our lives when often many, many people are not even conscious of life and how they go about it? So, just listening to you, talk about that, how did these men get real and how do people really get down to looking at the difference? Because just a few minutes ago when I made the comment, we repeat the patterns if we don't really become conscious of how we're showing up in these relationships. So what are some of the things that you share as, points of wisdom about becoming conscious so that you can make new choices?
Mm-hmm. Well, we all have to get to a place, I think, in our lives, and men specifically, I think we get to a place where we start seeking or we realize that there's a need for us to learn something. And it's the old adage, the Eastern wisdom of when the student's ready, the teacher appears. And that's where synchronicity, or even Deepak talks about synchrodestiny, comes into play, that when we begin to see that we need to learn, when we open open up our mind to learning, and we acknowledge, we profess, and we confess that as well, that we don't know it all, and we're open to learning more about how to live. But it's not a destiny. It's a journey, and it's an everyday thing. It's every day we begin to take inventory. We begin to look at how am I doing? What do I need to learn? How do I need to reach out? How do I need to put it out there? Because the mind is so powerful that it's like our people start talking to their people at the subconscious level. When we start making and setting an intention, all of a sudden somebody knocks on our door and says, "Excuse me, were you looking for a teacher?" And it may not be, that the physical manifestation may not be that blatant, but it's pretty blatant. I mean, we find somebody shows up. Somebody shows up to
right,
help
and it's
us.
Those powerful questions that you were talking about, like even when you're starting to go through it, the 1,000 questions, and just like if our listeners were listening to what you were doing, you were asking questions. And so it's that part of the shift to becoming conscious also is when we ask the questions, ask and you will receive, really does happen. And sometimes we just have to pay attention because that answer comes in a different form. But just like you were stating, if you keep asking, something shows up for you in some way, and then it's your choice to act on it.
Absolutely. I like, rather than affirming statements, affirmations in the form of statements, I much prefer affirmations in the form of questions. What can I do right now to feel happy? What can I do right now to be in a state of love? What would my life be like if it was wonderful? And I start to ask those questions. Because our subconscious, it's really interesting how the subconscious works with that. And I've written in a couple of my books, I've written about affirming statements and affirmations pretty extensively. But as I've learned throughout the years, the subconscious, there are times where if I say I'm brilliant, I'm wonderful, I'm successful, sometimes subconscious, it's like getting into a wrestling match or an arm wrestling match with a giant. The subconscious says, "Who are you trying to kid? That's not really you." And so the subconscious wants to debate that. But if I say, "How would life look like? What would life look like if everything was wonderful?" That's a different situation. The subconscious says, "Oh, well, let's go find the answer for that. Let's bring him the answer that he's looking for at this point." And that could be in the form of a lot of different things. If you don't like the answers you're getting in life, ask better questions. If you say, "Why me?" Your subconscious is going to come up with a lot of different reasons why you were a victim. But if you ask, "What can I do now to turn this around?" We start to tap into intelligence, that field of infinite intelligence that we all have access to, if we really start to ask those questions there. So it's important how we phrase that to the subconscious as well.
Yeah. Tom, I'd like to, if you're good, I'd like to open up to our listeners. We have some people on the webcast and then on the phone to question.
Okay.
And
sure.
If you're on the phone, you can hit *2 to ask a question. It'll raise your hand. And then if you're on the webcast, you have a box below there, and you can ask a question, and we'll have Tom to answer those. While I'm waiting, Tom, let me. Let's see. Right now, I don't have any questions, but maybe let me just give them a time to be able to ask the questions. So what are some specific things that our listeners today, because I always like having them do action steps, that they need to do? What would be some questions?
some questions or some actions?
Or I'm sorry, some actions that you would tell them that they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, with any change, any positive change, what you want to do is you want to create a habit. And so I would say that create, just work with a new habit in your life. Take 5 minutes a day, whether that be doing exercise or whether that be doing meditation or journaling, whatever that looks like to you, everybody can find 5 minutes a day to do something. And so just undertake some sort of positive change in your life, something that would be impactful for you, and spend 5 minutes every day doing that. And at the end of 30 days, think about it, you will put 150 minutes in it, but it's the repetitive act of doing that, and you will start to create a habit of doing that. It may expand into more, but right now, if you can, and this is what I do with my coaching clients, give me 5 minutes a day, just 5 minutes a day, with some sort of action that will be life-enhancing for you. And so that's...
Give some examples of that so that they...
Sure.
No, you mentioned the journaling before and the gratitude.
Right, the journaling, the gratitude list, the 5 minutes a day in meditation. If you don't do anything else, sit for 5 minutes and just focus on your breathing. And, to slow the mind, quiet the mind down. I've had people who don't exercise. And so what I tell them is, 5 minutes a day, do some exercise. Get up and walk around in your house. Just walk for 5 minutes and swing your arms. If you have some small hand weights, swing those as well. Get cans of soup or whatever. But spend five minutes every day moving and creating a new habit for you. Spend 5 minutes a day reading. Read a life-enhancing book. I'm amazed. Dottie, you and I are both avid readers. I'm amazed at how few people really read much in our society today. And, I think that certainly in my leadership training workshops, I tell people over and over again, leaders are readers. They have to read. And we already know what we know. We need to create, if we're going to take our thinking to another level, we have to be exposed to other ways of thinking or new mentors. And so reading is a good way to do that. Spend 5 minutes a day reading a life-enhancing book in some way that stretches you or causes you to think in different ways. Not a novel, not something you would ordinarily read anyway, not the paper, but something that on how to change behavior, how to move your life in a positive direction. So spend 5 minutes a day reading there as well. That's one of the most life-enhancing things anyone can do.
Right.
And again, if you do that, that's 150 minutes a month. Think about how many books you could read. If you multiply that times 12, how many books, how much knowledge, how many new ideas that you could gain and retain over the span of a year.
Right, and at this time when your energy is lower energy, what you're trying to do is shift your energy to a higher level. So all these actions that Tom's talking about are important to help you be able to lift you to a higher energy so that you are able to reclaim your life and start creating it in the direction that you want.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely, and you're right. It's about energy. It's about frequency levels. What we want to do is we want to get our life energy up at a higher frequency. If we don't, there's a danger there, too, because the lower we vibrate, the more susceptible we are to all sorts of illnesses and disease as well. So we want to continue. We want to continue to vibrate at high levels for our own physical well-being and then also our emotional and mental well-being as well.
Right, and so Tom's given our listeners a lot of little things that you can possibly do to try to raise that. Any other comments? We have a comment from one of the listeners. Hello, Dottie and Tom. Great interview. Please repeat the link for Living Free from Divorce bonus gift. Okay, that is bonus.livingfreefromdivorce.com. And you can see, if you want to go there right now, you can go there and see the 15 different items that you can receive from our speakers when you purchase those packages. And then you can go back to these messages, because just as Tom was going through his interview, you could see all the many ways that he made suggestions about, you know, shifting your mental focus and changing your physiology. And, you know, he gave specific kinds of things, and, you know, that whole idea about creating new rituals. So there's a lot of information in the speakers that it's hard maybe to take every single thing in that you really want to, you know, hear and be able to use, you know, because we're just overwhelmed sometimes. And, some, you know, I remember when I was going through it, it was hard to even move the vacuum. So hearing new information sometimes is kind of overwhelming too. And by having these bonus packages, you can go back and just listen for a little bit of the information or listen to a lot. And then, as I keep saying at the end of our calls, I'm always asking you to take some action, because our lives change when we take that action. Okay, Tom, I have a question for you. I often find I get discouraged by lack of resources such as money when it comes time for me to do certain things I want to do. I get frustrated, I don't have the money, and then I find myself not pursuing those dreams. What suggestions do you have to keep those dreams alive? Thank you for your question.
Okay. I think you have to start right where you are with what you have and do the best you can do at this point. We always can, you know, there are a lot of times we're waiting for our ship to come in, but that our ship's never going to come in. We build our ship underneath us there, and that takes starting right where we are, and to make it, it's going to be, a lot of times it'll be baby steps. You know, you may not have the money to finance a grand endeavor, but that's not going to stop you from taking the next step and taking the next step and taking the next step. And then what happens is the universe comes to our, it's like, again, happiness is not going to back up and get you. You move to where happiness is, you start to take some steps toward where you want to go, and providence meets you there. And so you, again, start where you are and do the best you can with what you have and let the rest of it, and don't worry about, you know, how you're going to get to those grand, the grand dreams and schemes. Start small and prepare to be astounded.
Yeah, and like your gratitude, you know, right, grateful for what you have right now. That's absolutely great.
If you're not going to be grateful in small things, you know, you're going to, I mean, how can you really be grateful in the larger things? I mean, you've got to practice gratitude. Start small.
Okay. Well, that looks like we've answered our listeners' questions at the moment. So, Tom, I want to thank you, and I'm so grateful for the gift you are in my life, as well as the gift you've given me to my life. And I appreciate you always helping me spread my wings. And I know what great support and a great resource you have been. And so I know you offered that to our listeners today to try to find those people. And I certainly have appreciated in 1,000 different ways that you've been that for me in so many ways. So thank you so much.
You're welcome, buddy. And I appreciate you too.
Well, thank you. So if you want to hear Tom's interview again, remember, it's available for free for 48 hours, and all the speakers' interviews are also on that bonus Living Free from Divorce.com. Tomorrow, we'll have Sandra Fadelis to help us how to get your sexy back. And Sandra is a relationship and dating coach who leads transformative programs that teach individuals how to succeed in love. And so I hope you can be willing to listen, you know, and be open, and we're all at different stages in that life, and you could be at a point where you're just like, I'm so angry, I don't want to find another person. But, you know, the greatest thing we all want to do is to be loved and be loved. So, you know, I hope you have the opportunity to be open and be willing. And then some of you might just be ready to see, oh, my gosh, I am ready, and what am I doing to close off people from not doing that, for not being available to be, you know, in the relationship that I want. So tomorrow, how to get your sexy back. And so I'd like to close with an affirmation, and this is from Joel Osteen also. Today, I choose to trust my higher power, God, source, universe, whichever is right for you, with my past, present, and future. Give me the wisdom to discern the seasons of my life and teach me to embrace the new things in my life. I'm so grateful for you as my listeners and speakers, and I appreciate you beginning our week with us. Please tell others that you might know that might benefit from our series. We hope you join us tomorrow, Tuesday, at noon Pacific time or 2 p.m. Central time. And thank you so much for being part of our series.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye.